I'm Frank Vaughn. It's June 11th, 2025. And when you try to be everything to everyone, you end up being nothing. Formless, without substance, androgynous, and horrendously fake. Which brings us to our High Lord Carney, our Prime Minister, who I may decide to refer to as the High Lord from here on out, because with the Governor General and their signature in hand, he is virtually a king here in Canada, and he certainly has demonstrated his scorn for normal parliamentary procedure. But let's just watch a moment as Mark Carney took in the quote-unquote festivities, raising the trans-gay rainbow flag thing, whatever we do in the month of June. Here he is. We'll just turn this down. We don't really need volume on this. Let's see. Let's judge his capacity to raise a flag. Look at him go. He's doing it. The ultimate symbol of virtue. I think we can cram a few more lines on there to make it good for everybody.
The flag is a mosaic. We're all different. We all have our distinctions. We're all Canadian. And one of our strengths of Canada is recognizing the people can be who they want to be. They can love whom they want to love. They can live where they want to live.
It's kind of disgusting seeing the Canadian flag. And we've talked about the Canadian flag, and we've talked about the symbol of Canada and how the flag's been replaced and how the people never got to vote on that. We talked about that on Flag Day, I believe. But the easy conversion of our national symbol into whatever color is necessary on any given day means that Canada is indeed a post-national state with no core identity, as Justin Trudeau used to say. We're malleable. We're androgynous. We're without form. We try to be everything to everyone and thus become nothing of substance. Meanwhile, this is Mark Carney in another incarnation from just a few days ago.
These are Muslim values. These are Canadian values.
It's an interesting contradiction that is painted by raising the gay trans rainbow pride flag and espousing Muslim values as being core to Canada. I talked about recently how Muslim schools do not teach the gender unicorn. They do not teach diversity as a strength. They teach what they want to teach. They are immune from the influence of government, at least for the time being. And they're not polluting their kids with the same ideology that's coming out of the Catholic schools and the public schools. Now, the Catholic schools, lowercase c, because how can they be truly Catholic? How can they be truly Christian when what they teach defies core precepts of Christianity? Why is it every single Catholic school flies the virtue flag without fail, along with all the public schools, but not a single mosque in this nation flies that flag? Now, there is one caveat, and we'll get to that. And that caveat's interesting in and of itself. But they are not expected to pay lip service to the ideology. They're not expected to fly the flag or celebrate it. You'll have to forgive me if there's a number of jump edits that are kind of out of place. I have to stop for coughing fits. When a school board or a municipal council decides that they're not going to participate in this ideologically motivated month called Pride Month, they don't want to paint a rainbow crosswalk, that they don't want to fly those flags on civic buildings or school buildings, it is a national controversy. But when the same happens every single day in the absolute vast 99.9% of mosques right here in Canada, no one bats an eyelash. When forces that openly advocate for the stoning to death of that community gather together on our streets in protest in the name of a foreign conflict, no one bats an eyelash. Nobody levels that criticism. When you try to be everything to everyone, you end up being nothing. You cannot be a nation that prides itself on being tolerant and inclusive to the acronym brigade at the same time as your principal source of population growth is immigration from regions where they are not tolerated. The highest native, if you can call it that, or domestic demographic growth is from immigrant communities that have decidedly intolerant viewpoints towards the Pride people. The headline is charges laid against Islamic State financer in Canada's terrorist financing investigation. It's not just the Islamic State, also known as ISIS, which you should keep in mind as we proceed through this video. It'll become obvious shortly, but it's also Hamas. It's also Islamic Jihad. It is many an organization that uses Canada as a platform to launder money and fund terrorism worldwide, and indeed fund terrorism right here in North America. As I've highlighted in previous videos, we've been singled out for this stuff. Now, this is separate from the debate as to whether or not inclusivity has gone too far. A society is defined much more by what it says no to than an unmitigated yes. If you say yes to everything, you become nothing. So there should be limits. Where those limits are demarcated is a discussion the public should be having, except in Canada, all discussion of saying no is limited or banned. And it's only going to become worse as advocates in this country try to create space in the acronym for the dreaded P, or the MAPS, as they call themselves, as they try to normalize relations between adults and children. Trying to be picky with my words here. But remember the Islamic State, and remember that we are doing this, and we're not calling it out. It's not just a Canadian problem. Trump meets Syria's al-Sharia, eyes normalization of ties with Damascus. Now, we don't call him al-Sharia here, we call him Jolani, and I do find it interesting that Al Jazeera calls him al-Sharia, Western media calls him Jolani. Who is Abu Muhammad al-Jolani? Ahmad Hussein al-Sharia, also known by his nom de guerre, Abu Muhammad al-Jolani. We call him by his nom de guerre, like Che Guevara or other notables. We don't call him by his real name. We give him his chosen war name. Where did he earn that name? Where did it get picked? Fighting for ISIS. Remember how we were supposed to end ISIS? We were supposed to stamp them out? How American lives have been lost? How countless tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of lives have been lost in an ongoing not multi-year, over a decade-long conflict in Syria? To at the end of that conflict, here is Donald Trump shaking his hand. Just to highlight, this is not just a Canadian problem now. Canada is sending, I believe it's hundreds of millions of dollars in aid cumulatively into this man's hand, into the Syrian regime's hand. All of that fighting, all of that nonsense. And we've handed them a country. And what are they doing with that country? Now, just so you know, this isn't some conspiracy theory. NBC News from 2024, past links to ISIS and Al-Qaeda raise fears about Syria's new regime. Now this, from the horse's mouth, from people who actually know the region, who have to live with the region, and unfortunately only has 259 likes and 115 retweets since March 18th, 2025. 6,316 people have been killed, including 4,700 civilians, 4,172 men, 345 women, and 194 children. The regime is targeting religious minorities in Syria with abandon, with barely a whisper out of Western media, with barely a whisper out of Western governments. In fact, all we're doing is sending them money and helping them get further ensconced. And Trump's principal concern is that they establish ties with Israel and the U.S. will drop all sanctions on Damascus. This is an ISIS man. This is an Al-Qaeda man. All while Mark Carney raises the virtue flag in Ottawa, pretending that he actually cares about the rights of gays and lesbians and all the other letter people in the world. when we are enabling their killers with our tax dollars. Now, I did mention that I found at least one mosque that has some affiliates around the country, but not many, that actually creates a space for pride. And it doesn't feature in a mega major way on their Facebook page, though you can see the rainbow flag. There is one. They had a big media push in 2016, 2017. Unity Mosque provides a space for observant Muslims who openly live LGBTQ relationships. This media push was met with, what would you call it? Approbation, condemnation from Canadian imams the country over. They received death threats from Islamic Jihad and many other individuals, and were largely and universally condemned within the Muslim community, again highlighting the contradiction that you can't have it both ways. You must make a choice. But that's not what we do in Canada, because we're trying to be everything to everyone. And thus, the nation itself is of no form and substance. Now, there is some degree of irony. I think whatever this infection I have in my lungs, I believe, is getting better. But it's been really hard to talk the last couple days without breaking into some kind of coughing fit. I want to spend what I got left in the tank today talking about legislation and bills again. This is a revisit to Bill C-2, an act respecting certain measures relating to the security of the border between Canada and the United States and respecting other related security measures. I don't know if I talked about this in full, and I'm not going to talk about it in full right now, but there's a very important distinction I need to make. We don't search mail in Canada, and we haven't for a long time. That's why companies, as I've highlighted on this channel, can advertise cocaine and methamphetamine to your door, secure in the mail, against any hope of intrusion. It's going on under our noses. Now, the only way to really deal with this issue is to search some mail. I understand that. I think that that is a, if you're looking to solve cartel crime overrunning this nation, you're going to have some kind of invasion into the postal system, which up to this point is immune, as well as the rail system and as well as the ports. The dicey issue is this bill would give police the power to do so without a warrant. That's a problem, because police forces should be able to put together an investigation, figuring out who is suspicious and whose mail needs to be searched, and go to a judge and get a warrant and have a procedure and have accountability. But that's not what this bill does. It grants them carte blanche. It also makes it so, without a warrant, and that's the key sticky point here for me, they can go to any website and they can demand the database of users. You can demand your address, your name, your credit card information, all of that without a warrant. That's a problem. And my guess is, even as we've moved towards decriminalization and making it easier for addicts to stay addicted and get their supply, I wonder if this is a move by the Liberal government, by the Carney government, by the High Lord himself, to actually start bringing things back under control. To have a nation, he's signaling that he wants to have a strong military. He's signaling through C-5 that he wants to end provincial autonomy. There's the bill that was proposed by an Edmonton NDP member of parliament, which I highlighted, which says that you can't leave the Canada Pension Plan unless the other provinces give you permission. Now, I think I called that MP a Liberal in the video. I knew that she was an NDP member of parliament, but they're all the same. At this point, what's the point of differentiating the NDP from the Liberals, when all they've done is enable the Liberals this entire time? We're in a new phase, though. This is far more authoritarian than anything we've experienced up to this point. Notwithstanding the Freedom Convoy and all that business, and notwithstanding COVID, this, what I'm talking about is, there was an element of collaboration within the Liberal Party and within the Liberal government that steered the ship of Justin Trudeau. Justin Trudeau is a puppet. He's not a ruler. Mark Carney's a ruler. He doesn't even need Parliament. He doesn't care about Parliament. He's willing to use the Governor General to rule. He's much more authoritarian in structure and governing style than Justin Trudeau. Hence the fake executive order signings. He's getting you ready. He's getting you ready. So if they intend to take more full control of the nation, more full control of the people, they may find it necessary to rein in the rampant drug problem. They're also under pressure from Donald Trump to do so. And if China's going to dry up the supply anyway in order to secure a trade deal with the United States, and that's the supply of precursors which are coming in through our wide open ports, there may be a coordinated move by the Canadian government and the Chinese governments to clean things up for a while. And so, if they can go to these websites and find out the names and addresses of every single person who ordered illegal drugs over the last decade even, and that's not just cocaine and fentanyl. If you ordered a pound of weed from one of these cartel websites for $200-$400, which is much cheaper than the government, you could find yourself facing criminal charges because the government's mood has changed. C2 sets that up. C2 sets that up without even the necessity of a warrant. This is Bill S230. Wait, no, it's not. This is an act respecting Arab Heritage Month. Outstanding. No. This is Bill S230. An act respecting the development of a national strategy for soil health protection, conservation, and enhancement. Canada has some of the most protective soil health habits in the entire world. If you're worried about the loss of fertile, arable land, you have to look to India and you have to look to China. We are bringing in a lot of immigrants from those places, and many of them land in agriculture, and they bring their agricultural practices with them. I've seen this myself in eastern Ontario, north of Port Hope, north of Cobourg. There's big operations there, and they are depleting the soil. They're using way too much fertilizer. It's ending up in the rivers, and nobody wants to talk about it because we don't want to be racist. And this bill, of course, doesn't talk about that either. There's this huge preamble about soil. But we have to look at what it adds. The minister must provide representatives of the provincial governments responsible for agriculture and agri-food, indigenous governing bodies, and municipal governments with an opportunity to collaborate in the development of the national strategy. Long story short, this is another attempt by the federal government to claim power and jurisdiction over the provinces. I've heard the number thrown around, and I don't know this firsthand. I don't know if Danielle Smith has indicated this firsthand, but certainly her actions hint at this strategy, that she is content to wait 2 years to see what Mark Carney does. The government's already moving. If you wait 2 years, you're going to find yourself deprived of much of your power and your leverage. The time is now if you actually care about Alberta. The time is now if you care about Saskatchewan. We shouldn't be shaking hands with these people. We shouldn't be making deals with these people, because as they're supposed to be negotiating with us in good faith, they're bringing forward legislation which will further erode provincial autonomy. Does anyone remember in Saskatchewan when federal agents were trespassing on people's private land, ostensibly to test their dugouts for contamination, to give them some kind of jurisdictional casus belli to invade the lives of Saskatchewan farmers? And the Sask Party government came out and said, if you keep doing it, we're going to arrest you. And Ottawa was powerless to do anything about it. The military buildup that Ottawa is talking about has in my mind, very little to do with Russia. It has much more to do with enhancing their power to enforce federal jurisdiction. We've become weak under Trudeau. I think Mark Carney's here to centralize the state and make it much stronger and more militarized. And here is the legal framework that they're proposing. Every single one of these that I've showed you in the last couple days erodes provincial autonomy and freedom of action. And these are the sorts of things that I don't think many Canadians know. To me, this is sort of secondhand, but I'm going to introduce you to Bill C-1. What is Bill C-1? Every parliamentary session has a first bill, and this is an act respecting the administration of oaths of office. So I find this interesting. This, the sole purpose of this, it never passes. It never gets voted on. It gets introduced, but it never gets debated, and it never advances to passing. The purpose of C-1 is to claim sovereignty or claim the authority of Parliament from the King, from the Governor General. It's symbolic. But it's also symbolic in my mind that it never passes, never receives royal assent. Canada is really backwards. You have to understand that these so-called symbolic positions actually carry power. It's not the same thing as saying that the king runs Canada, because I wouldn't make that claim. He doesn't have the time for that. He's busy doing his own thing. The Commonwealth has to run itself. Power has to be delegated, but that's precisely the point. The power still rests with the crown. It's just delegated away. More power rests in the prime minister's hands than rests in Parliament itself. And once again, the Prime Minister and the Cabinet, which is the government, is not Parliament. You don't vote for your government, you vote for Parliament. And I think that's an important distinction. And now I just want to briefly go through a couple news items from the United States. First off, the protests in L.A., because once again, Canadian media seems to want to insert itself with lots of opinions on what's going on in the United States. Let's be clear. A bunch of people are engaged in illegal, violent activity in defense of people who are committing illegal crimes, mainly the crime of illegal immigration and facing the consequences of those actions. They're destroying police cars. They're committing violence. And the president has deployed the National Guard to deal with the problem because Gavin Newsom is apparently incapable of dealing with it. The mayor is incapable of dealing with it. And people have a right to travel on the one of the main arteries which they decided to block up. People have a right to expect lawful order in their states, in their cities, and in their towns. And for some reason, the media party and the Democrats and the media party here in Canada and the Liberal Party, which is virtually an extension of the Democrats here, are offended by that very concept and notion, largely because it's Donald Trump who's taking action. But what's on screen has nothing to do with that. I just think it is perfectly justified to deploy the National Guard to deal with this problem. I wish Canada would do something similar when... See, the Freedom Convoy assembled peacefully and had all aspects of paramilitary forces deployed against it. But Hamas is given free rein. The Palestinian activists are given free rein. The Khalistanis are given free rein to run ransack all over our cities and our streets. And nothing is done. In fact, they're brought coffee and donuts. It's sick. It makes me sick to my stomach. It's a tragedy. Old Canada is being stomped out. The charter, what little value it has, is being stomped on. It's a joke. We're without form and substance. Let's listen to this, though.
Hi, everybody. I'm Robert F. Kennedy, Jr., your HHS Secretary, and I'm here today with NIH Director Dr. Jay Bhattacharya and FDA Commissioner Dr. Marty McGarry. I couldn't be more pleased to announce that as of today, the COVID vaccine for healthy children and healthy pregnant women has been removed from the CDC recommended immunization schedule.
one can dream of the same thing happening here in Canada. No one needs this. Nobody needs this. Not even those who are identified as at risk. No one needs this medical procedure anymore, which is why even in Canada, asleep, hypnotized Canada, people aren't taking this anymore. But that's about all I got. Let's end on something fun for once.